This is John Floridis. Welcome to Musicians Spotlight. Today we welcome back George Winston. This is John Floridis. Welcome to Musicians Spotlight. I'm very pleased to be speaking today to George Winston. How are you doing?
Great, John. Great to be back in Missoula and Montana. Great to be back on the show.
Yeah, and we should set the stage for folks here. As you heard a little piano music there, we are literally on the stage of the Wilma Theater in Missoula, late May 2018. And we want to make sure to thank Logjam Presents for giving us access to for George to do. We're recording this right before your sound check, so we'll let folks know that. And doing the interview here just ahead of that. And just to kind of set the stage, that's what's going on. George, we were talking before we started the interview about the fact that this will be the third time that you've been on the program. But the first time that I've had a chance to interview you, you spoke with Michael Marsalek, who started the program back in 1992. And if memory serves, I'm almost positive of this, you were the second guest on the program of all time. And then 10 years later, 2002, you did an interview with Brian Copper, who was our co-host for the program for many years. And suddenly 16 years pass, and here we sit in late May of 2018. George's music is undoubtedly going to be very familiar with a lot of our listeners. And can I call you the pride of Miles City? Is that is that stretching things a little bit? But
Probably.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to call it. I like to call it.
Yeah, mainly grew up Miles City in Billings.
Yeah.
Before the family moved to Mississippi, which was drastically different, you know, in every way.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Climate, culture. Yeah. We moved to Florida, so that was a good experience. Just to have those different topographies and the way the seasons are so different in each of those three areas.
Mm-hmm.
The first winter in Mississippi was amazing because, like, where is it? I mean, it's January and this is winter.
Yeah.
That was amazing.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. But start out with strong Montana roots and then a more than four-decade-long career over, I don't want to embarrass you, but over 15 million albums sold. Most of those recordings, of course, featuring your piano work, but also, obviously, you've done a lot of stuff with slack key guitar as well. And certainly a lot of folks, I think, know you as part of the iconic recording label, Windham Hill. George, I wanted to kind of dive right into this most recent project, because I know there's a lot of stuff to talk about. Spring Carousel, your most recent recording. And this is a very special recording for you and one for a very special cause, one that mirrors your own journey.
Well, I had a bone marrow transplant in late 2012 at City of Hope near Los Angeles. When I was recovering, they had a village that you can stay in. It's about a block away, and you can walk to your doctor appointments. And, you know, I had access to the auditorium piano every night. So I was practicing for when I started touring again, and a bunch of songs just kind of happened. I realized it was, you know, a benefit for City of Hope's research. They're a nonprofit research facility and a cancer hospital. Mm. And then it would not have happened without their treatment and their piano. Mm. I'm not a TV watcher. You know, I'm not going to lay in bed watching TV. You know, last time I watched TV was, I don't know, 61 or something. You had to walk up to it.
That was like pre-Gilligan's Island, pre-Star Trek. Maybe Gunsmoke was was going on at that point.
It was just good serendipity that there was a piano and I got access to it. Practicing songs, you know, playing during the tour, but then these other songs just kind of came out of the subconscious or wherever things come from like that.
And George, if I'm not mistaken, this whole journey that brought you to that point started not far from where we're recording this, up in, was it Coeur d'Alene or Sandpoint? It was in Sandpoint.
I was in Sandpoint,
When you got sick, and that's when you discovered this was going to be something you had. This is the start of a long journey for you.
Well, I knew I had the Maya dysplasia, what it's called.
So you knew that before?
Yeah, it's okay. Very low, like, red blood platelets. But I had 4 months of touring, so, I mean, I lived with it a while. I can live with it 4 more months, but after the show in Sandpoint, I said, I've absolutely got nothing left. Mm. Now, my body's only given out on me once ever, running the 880 in junior high. My technique for long distance running is to jog the first half and sprint the second half as fast as you could. So I was rounding the last turn, going towards second place for the whole state, everything, I mean, hundreds of people. And my thighs got numb. I'm surprised I didn't fall over. I couldn't accelerate, but I kept running, and I have no feeling in my legs whatsoever, and somehow I didn't fall over. Would I do that same thing again, the same situation? Absolutely. Huh. I would say, nope, I got to finish a tour.
Really?
So I haven't learned anything.
So the lessons learned from
your 880.
Okay, no, what got you through that experience, or got you to the point of being able to do that many shows, was going back to your history as a track runner back in junior high school. That's great.
Yeah, well, that just thinking.
The perseverance.
My body, it won't give out. It gave out then, but I know why. So, but would I do the same thing again? Would I complete the tour? Yes, I wouldn't stop. Hmm. I would complete the tour. I would make the same mistake again.
I see what you're saying.
I haven't learned anything. Thank you.
George, I want to reference your interview with Brian Copper, which was the interview you did the last time you were on the program, and bring up something that you talked about with Brian. And I think it's still very much relevant now, and I'm sure always will be. And that's the concept of staying in the moment when you are performing, because to the best of my knowledge, most of the performing you do and recording is as a soloist. All musicians try to stay in the moment, be conscious of the now when they're performing. But for a soloist, it's even more vital.
Well, just to not fall on my face, you know, you just got to pay. It's like driving a car. You know, you've got to pay attention. Now, sometimes driving a car, you can be in the zone. You can go, what did I just do the last hour?
Mm-hmm.
Stop for all the stop signs. You know, I made all the turns. I don't remember anything. So I don't get in the zone musically too often, probably maybe four times ever. But that's what practice is about. You know, if I'm not in the zone, you can still get the feeling of the song. When you're in the zone, you're not thinking of anything. But I'm usually thinking like, whoa, this part's coming up that I just recently added, okay. But sometimes I'm thinking of the grocery list. So I kind of just think of whatever I am. But just like when you're walking down the stairs or you're driving a car, you know, you won't fall on your face. But certainly aware of the audience and the town and the drive from the previous town to the town I'm in as part of the show. And it's interesting that the audience, I would thinks they're there for me, and I think I'm there because of them. So it's kind of two sides of the same coin. If they weren't there, I wouldn't be there. I'd be practicing somewhere, but I wouldn't be on a stage just playing. I don't play for myself ever. I mean, I use that time to practice the hard parts. I can imagine maybe four times in my life that I've said, just sat down and I said, I just got to play. You know, probably maybe six times ever that I'm on a roll and I'm enjoying what I'm playing. Usually I'm not enjoying it all that much. I'm going, you know, I want to get this good and I've really got to work on that passage.
One of the things that I remember from your interview with Brian the last time you were on the program was in relation to what we're talking about, that you said sometimes you can be in the midst of a performance, think, oh, this really isn't going very well. I'm not in the zone. I'm not in the moment. And then go back and listen to it and realize, oh, actually, that sounds pretty good. So it's not as much of an equation as the way people might think of it.
Yeah. Yeah, what I think has nothing to do with reality, and what I feel has nothing to do with reality. It's just whatever it is. So I've done things in the studio, or the engineer I work with said, come in and listen to that. I go, why? There's absolutely nothing there. And I listen back, and I go, is that what I just did? And that's pretty good.
Yeah.
And that's nice when that happens. It's more often the other thing. I think it's good, and I go in and listen, and I got to do it again. And then listen a week later and go, well, the one I didn't like is actually, I kind of like it. Yeah. Two weeks later, I go, no, I don't like it. So over time, I give many months to evaluate it. I like it, I don't like it. I like it, I don't like it. And if 2 or 3 months consecutive, yeah, I think it gets the feeling across. And I think it fits with the other songs. My model is the first Doors album, where it was like one long song with 11 parts. So sometimes I'll play a song differently in the studio than I will live, because no, this song needs to be song number 4, and it really needs to be kind of a tone poem that's a minute and a half, and I'll play the 5-minute version live. So I'm really paying attention to the record, the theme of the record. Kind of like if you're doing a soundtrack for a movie, you'd be serving the movie, except there's no movie. So I'm really serving the theme of the record. What happens is over time I'll see there's 7, 8, or 10 songs that are a feeling like Forest or Plains or Spring Carousel, and then I'll just wait till other songs emerge or hear a song of somebody else's and I go, wow, this one will fit in there. So usually I'm working on several records at a time slowly just to see what fits.
Interesting.
And there's no deadline. It's done when it's done, not when I want it to be done, not when I think it's done. So I don't trust what I think, and I don't trust what I feel either. I just trust, I mean, if something's working out, that comes to me later, you know. But, you know, like you said, I could feel good about a take in the studio and go in and listen and go, no, no, no. But I felt good when I played it, and there's a lot of notes and licks, and it's fancy. And I listen back and go, it's not really saying anything. It's not really telling the story, I think. It's always kind of, I think. I think this is good. That's about as good as I get. Like the Spring Carousel record, these 15 songs, they get a little bit synergetic. Wow, they all make each other better. It's the right team of songs or the right teammates for each other.
This is John Floridis. You're listening to Musicians Spotlight. I'm speaking today with George Winston, and we are speaking from the stage of the Wilma Theater in Missoula, Montana at, it looks like, almost 11 o'clock at night. So we should probably wrap up the interview here in a little bit. Thank you so much for making time to speak with us. But we're speaking to George on the stage of the Wilma Theater. But one question I wanted to ask, and I confess this is a bit of a Barbara Walters-esque
question. Is that television?
Yeah,
that is television. Oh, I wouldn't know. Heard the name.
All right, so maybe you won't have that kind of.
Well, Professor Longhair was in his own world. I was never a British music fan, but you couldn't get away from the Beatles, mm-hmm. much as I tried to. Paul McCartney asked him to play a private party for him, and he'd never heard of him or them. He said, "Oh, okay, sure, Mr. McCartney, we'll do it." In 1975, he was in his own world.
And, oh my God!
I mean, there are a lot of people we admire that were so in their own world.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of in mine, too. I think maybe we all are. Everybody's trying to survive. Everybody's trying to defy death and gravity every single second. It's like we're all riding unicycles every second. We're just used to it. So
yeah.
It doesn't seem like a struggle. But, you know, every blade of grass, every tree, every person, every cat is trying to defy gravity and death every second. It's amazing.
It's so true.
And the universe with the entropy, you know, expanding, things getting more disorganized over time, it's amazing things get done. See, you can
Absolutely.
Prove that because you can destroy something in a minute, and it will take a month to build that.
Mm-hmm. Well, the question is, what would you tell I'm going to go to 1979, because that's, if I'm not mistaken, that's when you first started recording with Windham Hill?
1980.
Late 80. All right, so
mid-80.
Somewhere around that time, this is when your career as a musician really took a different course.
Well, I actually stopped playing in 77 because I couldn't be Fats Waller.
Okay.
Realizing that only two people I've ever heard could, Teddy Wilson and Art Tatum. You know, I just... And then I heard Professor Longhair's music in 79 and went, that is so beautiful. It's the most beautiful thing I've ever heard. I think I can do that. Well, it took till 2014 to really come to terms. I didn't know it was going to take 35 years. Mm. I might have kind of flinched. But it's like I wanted that as much as you want air if you're, you know, swimming underwater or water if you're thirsty. And then the folk piano stuff came back. The autumn tunes were part of that. So like mid-1980, that's okay. When I recorded that record.
All right. So what would you tell the, let's go with 1980, what would you tell the 1980 version of George Winston about the journey that he was about to go on for another 38 years?
Just keep working on it. And, you know, give it some time off when you need to. Wake up each day. What are today's tasks? What has to be done? What do I want to do? But what has to be done? I hadn't heard James Booker yet, which James Booker, the late, great New Orleans pianist, is really the main way I think of playing the piano is in terms of his languages. In fact, when I play Professor Longhair, I usually use a James Booker left hand, the Professor Longhair right hand. Or if I play a Doors song, Vince Guaraldi up-tempo tune or a Doors up-tempo tune, it's usually a James Booker left hand. And then the ballads would be a folk piano thing. That album sold well. The Autumn record is a complete accident. And I said, well, it's a chance to play. I'm going to play. Don't put out records until they're ready, until they're done. Wait till it is ready. You know, you don't want to give birth too soon if you're a female of any species. You know, you don't want to overstimulate the plants with too much water in the garden to make them grow faster. So it's kind of like that. Like, let things take as long as they take. You know, some discipline and some just show up and watch what's happening.
Great.
I guess that's what I'd say. Thank you.
GeorgeWinston.com is the name of George's website. It's where you can find out all things George Winston, including his performance schedule and recordings and all different kinds of projects that you're involved with. And Spring Carousel is the name of the most recent recording. Great having a chance to talk shop with you here on the stage of the Wilma Theater in Missoula, and had some real great connections that people mentioned. I told folks on our Facebook page that I was going to be speaking with you, and I had some real nice connections with someone. Remembered a private party in Big Fork that you had done, a house concert. There were just some really great, a lot of folks wanting to know if you're still playing barefoot, you know, from very intimate connections to you to people's just kind of fond recollections of your performances.
Yeah, I use the socks because the metal on the foot kind of wears away the skin, turns red, but I take off the shoes to eliminate that. And I also have a foot pad because I don't know what the left foot's doing. Whenever Michael Jordan was going to drive to the basket, he'd stick his tongue out. He didn't know he was doing it. And so I don't know what the left foot is doing. I know what I'm doing musically, but I don't know how I play. I don't know. Am I playing? Are the fingers flat? Am I, you know, smiling? I have no clue what my body's doing except trying to play the right notes. That's enough.
Sure. Well, thank you again very much for being on the program.
Thanks again. For having me again.
Yeah, yeah. And well, let's not make it another 16 years. Till next time. Thank you. This is John Floridis. You've been listening to Musicians Spotlight. Our guest today has been George Winston. If you'd like to contact us, you can do so through the Montana Public Radio website, mtpr.org, as well as through our own website, musicianspotlight.org. You can also find us online on Facebook and on Twitter. Our program is available as a podcast from those websites as well as through iTunes. Special thanks to Logjam Presents for this interview. Musicians Spotlight is a production of Montana Public Radio.